Hi, I'm David Kleon. I'm senior editor at Bloggingheads TV. This is an episode of Worldwise, and I'm speaking once again with Alena Tregub. Alena, why don't you reintroduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Alena Tregub. I'm co-founder and CEO of Global Education Leadership, which is an educational consulting that focuses on educational exchanges between the United States and Central Eastern Europe, including Ukraine. And I'm also a political analyst of Ukrainian-Russian affairs.
And of course, Ukrainian-Russian affairs continue to be very interesting on a day-to-day basis. So I guess things have changed. We're recording this late Thursday afternoon, and just in the last few hours, we've heard about some sort of agreement that's been reached with U.S. and Russian and European diplomats in Geneva, Switzerland. Secretary of State John Kerry is there. And we're both kind of scrambling to understand what happened. But, well, can you tell us a little bit about what this agreement says?
Well, from what I have seen, the agreement says that all the sides, Ukrainians and Russians, they agree to disarm all the units that they have on the territory of Ukraine, and it looks and to release the buildings that they are seizing at this moment. So it looks like a great agreement to me, but a question is whether indeed those separatists in the East will adhere to this Geneva agreement, whether they will follow.
Right, and of course, also it's interesting that it's about disarmament in Ukraine because, of course, there are tens of thousands of Russian troops massed on the border just outside Ukraine in Russia, which of course is their right to do. Although President Obama has called for them to stop massing on the border, but it's very hard, I think, for the situation to diffuse while they're there. But tell us a little bit about the situation in these buildings. This is in the cities of Donetsk and Luhansk and Kharkiv as
Yes,
well.
these are two regions of Ukraine, oblasts, and they belong to one bigger region which is called Donbas. So this is essentially where those actions take place. This is the only area in the mainland Ukraine which is the most pro-Russian out of all other areas. There are around 20% of local residents who support integration into Russian Federation, and that's why buildings were taken over this in this area, because indeed it's impossible to do such operations without the support of local population.
Right. So if 20%, and I haven't looked at actual polling, but I've heard it's something like that, a large minority. It seems like the situation ought to be manageable. In fact, I understand that in the last 24 hours, we've seen something we never saw in Crimea and haven't seen much of in eastern Ukraine so far, an actual pro-Ukrainian demonstration in this part of the country. You know, people walking around
Yes,
with Ukrainian flags as if to say,
that's
no, don't annex us. So yeah, is there such sentiment in the East? I mean, has Putin overplayed his hand?
well, I think if you listen to Vladimir Putin's press conference on the 4th of March, he was speaking about possible like invasion of Ukraine, and he said, if this happens, I want to see how Ukrainian soldiers shoot at their own people, because Ukrainian children and Ukrainian women will be standing in front of our Russian soldiers, and that's the way we are going to have this war. So basically, I don't know if he said this intentionally or he was just too nervous when he revealed basically his whole strategy of how he plans to occupy Ukraine. But indeed, he hoped that he can take over eastern Ukraine without much resistance, because he hoped that the pro-Russian sentiment is really strong.
Well, and of course, because that seems to have worked fabulously well for him in Crimea. I mean,
Crimea was different. Crimea has 50% of ethnic Russians, whereas in Donetsk and in this area, there are much less. There are, I think, around 30% of ethnic Russians. So, yes, there is not enough support. Most people are still indifferent. They don't know what they are standing for. So we're talking about 20% pro-Russian, 20% like pro-Maidan, pro-Ukrainians, and the rest, 60% are just staying at home and just waiting, just see what happens. So maybe I think there is a danger that in that region, if they see that Russia prevails, Russia is more powerful, they will switch to Russian side. And that's probably Putin, that's his calculation. I'm quite optimistic because, they were trying to create this chaos in Ukraine, this civil war, as they call it in Russia, for weeks already, and yet we see some violence, but it is contained, it is limited. And we see now people from Kiev, people from Western Ukraine, they started actually to reach out to people in Eastern Ukraine, explain them more about what the revolution was about. Because Putin propaganda created a boogeyman, Banderovets, whom nobody ever saw. And people in Eastern Ukraine, they were waiting for those boogeymen to come from Kiev.
The idea that the fascists had taken over.
Yeah, like the fascists.
Right.
And kill them only because they don't speak Ukrainian, which doesn't make any sense, right? Because on Maidan, half of protesters spoke Russian.
Right.
And I think because nobody ever saw those Banderovets, people in those regions, maybe they started to understand that maybe it's all fake, maybe it's all a fabrication. And speaking about that, today, former Ukrainian Minister of Interior released some plans which he got from his own sources, of FSB, and those plans
the,
say
the
that...
The FSB is the Russia's contemporary equivalent of the KGB. It's the secret police. Yeah.
Yeah, he says he has some sources in Russia, and he says that they plan to kill around 100, 200 people in actually Western Ukraine and kind of show that this is done by Banderovtsy. Which
wow.
Like outrageous. I hope, you know, after he usually reveals legitimate documents. Well, but hopefully it's now all over Ukrainian media that this provocation is being prepared by Russia. So hopefully it will not come true.
Yeah, I guess this is that's what we would call a false flag operation. And it's we've seen quite a few of those recently, including a notable one that's gotten some coverage just today. First, there were a lot of news outlets reporting that these pamphlets were being distributed all over Donetsk, calling on the Jewish residents of that city to register themselves and register what property they control, which has an eerie reminiscence of the Holocaust. And of course, the Holocaust, one of many places where it took place, was in Ukraine, and it badly hurt the Jewish community there. So and so people reported that, and there was this fear that that Russia or Russia's proxies in Eastern Ukraine were sort of tapping into anti-Semitic tactics, which would be ironic given that Russia keeps accusing the new government in Ukraine of doing the same thing. More recent reporting from the New Republic's Julia Yaffe and BuzzFeed's Rosie Gray and others has actually debunked this claim, but not before Secretary of State John Kerry himself seemed to refer to it. And said that, you know, this is outrageous if it's happening. So, you know, it's not clear who did this. It's possible that pro-Ukrainian forces distributed this and tried to blame it on pro-Russian forces. It might just be someone's random prank. But it does seem like there's just a ton of misinformation floating around about what each side is doing and about the Jews. And Tell me some other, well, anything you know about that story.
Some other examples.
And some other examples,
absolutely.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's basically wartime, and following news during war is absolutely different activity from like a regular peaceful time. Right now, a lot of news are being like fabricated. And some are not even fabricated, but it's hard to understand what's really going on. For example, I woke up yesterday and I saw immediately all over Ukrainian websites tanks with Russian flags, wow, you know, on the territory of Ukraine. So I got like really, really scared. But then when I investigated what was really going on, Ukrainian military, they were trying to conduct this anti-terrorist operation in Donbass, and local residents and some separatists, some pro-Russian activists, they approached them and they said that they need to give away their tanks to them.
Huh.
And those guys, they were, you know, Ukrainian army is psychologically not prepared for any warfare. So they just gave away those equipment. And surprisingly enough, those local residents who are activists immediately knew how to drive a tank. So they took those tanks and said, put the Russian flags and took them away. And that is what happened.
You know, it's crazy. So, this crisis has been going on for really a couple months now. You referred to it as a war, and I don't necessarily dispute that characterization, but it's the weirdest war I think any of us have ever seen. It could at any time explode into a pretty classic, you know, tanks versus tanks, armies versus armies, very bloody conflict. As things stand, there have been almost no, I wish I could say no casualties, but very, very few incidents of actual shooting or bloodshed.
There are casualties.
There have been a small handful. And of course, I mean, if you include what Yanukovych was doing to protesters on Maidan, then there was a much larger number. But that mm-hmm. sort of predated Russia's direct intervention. But it's been a lot of bluffs, really. You know, the Russian government seems to believe that the Ukrainian government is not capable of defending its territory and of intervening to stop Russia from annexing territory, and that it has the popular support in parts of the country to annex territory. The Ukrainian government seems to believe that if they hold back from firing any shots, that it will make mm-hmm. Russia look like an aggressor, which I believe it is, and I'm sure, I know you believe it is, and that will, you know, that will make the U.S. and European countries more supportive of the Ukrainian government. So both sides seem to have a strong incentive not to actually fire. And it's this sort of, it seems like they're daring each other. Do you think this is a sustainable dynamic, or do you think that we are, I mean, do you think we're moving toward both sides backing down and accepting a new status quo, or do you think that there's still a real risk of a shooting war?
Well, I think definitely we here have one side who is aggressive and another side who is just trying to defend itself. And the side which is aggressive, Russian Federation, Putin, he has a goal. He doesn't have a concrete plan, but he has a very concrete goal. He needs to keep Ukraine inside the orbit of his influence. He needs to create some buffer zone between NATO and Russian Federation. He also needs, which is even more important, to be seen as the great hero by his own people inside his own regime and as a gatherer of Russian lands. So in this case, what he's trying to do, he occupied Crimea. It was a great experience for him. He did it almost bloodlessly, like 2-3 people died. And his approval rating in Russia is just soaring. So he would want right now to make sure that the rest of Ukraine does not consolidate as a nation state and does not move towards EU and NATO. So he either wants right now to destabilize Ukraine and create some kind of, you know, economic, like default civil war. Or even better plan for him is to take over territories of Ukraine, like Catherine II, to get the access to the Black Sea, Odessa, Mykolaiv, Kherson. He already has Crimea. This would be like Plan Max, you know, probably, or, you know, and Eastern Ukraine.
But you think he's willing to settle for less as long as he maintains the ability to continue destabilizing Ukraine? He doesn't necessarily need more territory.
Yeah, he now said that he will not recognize a presidential election because...
And when are those scheduled again, the presidential elections?
25th of May. Because essentially what Euromaidan was about and this election is Ukraine moving to become a democratic state, which is more like a regular European democracy. It's unclear whether it will be integrated into EU or not, because EU did not extend its invitation to Ukraine. Same goes for NATO. But Putin, he already wants to prevent any possible scenario like that. Right. And he took a very emotional decision after Maidan, because he maybe thought that Maidan was somehow organized by Western powers and supported by Western powers, and that's why he decided to act the way he's acting. Because I've been studying Putin's policies in former USSR region, and his main idea was to recreate this USSR as a Eurasian Union. So essentially, his land grab in Crimea goes against this goal, because it scares off those potential members of his new postmodern Soviet Union, because what they see that Russia would be much more aggressive than they thought. And right. Kazakhstan, Belarus, right now, they are thinking whether they should join their future with Russia.
Well, you know, and another interesting kind of irony here is that by removing Crimea, Putin has actually tilted what's left of Ukraine's demographics that much more pro-Western. And if you were to remove Donetsk, Luhansk, I mean, the more, you know, quote-unquote pro-Russian territories that he peels off from Ukraine, mm-hmm. especially before these elections, the more the new Ukrainian government is going to be anti-Russian, just as a matter of simple demographics. So, and I have wondered, actually, if the Euromaidan movement and some of the people in the new government on some level know that and are not entirely upset at the prospect of the most kind of pro-Russian regions leaving. I mean, they'll obviously say they are. They'll obviously, mm-hmm. you know, make speeches about Ukraine's territorial integrity. But on some level, might it not actually be good for consolidating Ukraine as a nation state if it were more solidly Ukrainian? I mean, what do you think?
Well, there is a big discussion right now in Ukraine, what's best for Ukraine, and if indeed people in Donbass, if they prefer Russia, they should have the referendum and they should go to Russia. And we don't need to have war over that. But people, I think, in the government and in civil society, they understand very well that it's not Putin's goal to take Donbass and leave.
Yeah.
He doesn't want Ukraine to move to the West. And he will not just take Donbass and leave. He actually, I think, even for Donbass, he doesn't plan to annex them like he did with Crimea. He wants to maybe keep them as Transnistria, like gray criminal buffer zone where there is no rule of law, where some local elites govern.
This is the Russian-dominated breakaway province from Moldova that has been kind of existed in a frozen state since the Soviet breakup. Just the audience doesn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it will be a failure for Putin. So he will not go for that. And that's why in Kiev, the opinion dominates that, of course, if we just give away Donbass, it's not such a big tragedy for Ukraine, because at stake here we have the whole like disintegration of Ukraine. But people understand that if they give away Donbass, it means Putin will move further.
Yeah,
and that's why I think the public opinion is pressuring right now government in Kiev more and more to be firm on Donbass and don't repeat the Crimean scenario, because those sections of government were unpopular and basically there are protests in Kiev in front of the parliament, in front of the cabinet of ministers of former Euromaidan activists who are accusing government of giving up Ukrainian territories to Russia. And they even suspect that government are Russian agents.
How would you evaluate so far the performance of some of the leading figures in the new Ukrainian government? And I mean, do you think that Ukraine's new government, and I'm thinking in particular of what's his name, Turchinov, the acting president, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who's the prime minister, I think, Poroshenko, who's running for president, Yulia Tymoshenko, who's running for president. How would you say they've handled this situation so far? Are there any sort of leading Ukrainian politicians you admire now?
Well, actually, no. Yeah. Well, there are no new politicians worth admiring. Whom I admire are activists who keep pushing all those senior politicians that you have just named. They keep pushing them to adopt reform packages. There is a group of activists in Ukraine called reanimation. It's called like intensive therapy package of reforms. And these are the demands that society wanted for years, like creation of public television, creation of some laws that would make Ukraine a democracy, essentially, and that would make it very difficult to reverse this process. So they create agenda for every week, and they demand the parliament to adopt those laws and government to sign them. And Yulia Tymoshenko, she made a commitment that she will follow all the demands. She will.
Well, and she's a woman of her word, right? We can trust whatever she says. So
yeah, well, she met with them at least, and indeed, right now she controls a big faction in the parliament, and they are voting for those laws. Not all of them, not all the laws are being adopted, but at least there is partial success. And we didn't see that happening under former Yanukovych government. So this government is more responsive than Yanukovych government, but then, of course, there are a lot of issues of cronyism, corruption, same things as we saw before, but at least right now they are all on Facebook, especially the Minister of Interior. They speak about every move that they make, and they are being criticized a lot. There are a lot of protests against them. And unlike Yanukovych, they don't crash those protests, but they are more responsive.
Wasn't there also a giant brawl on the floor of the Ukrainian parliament, the Rada, like a week or two ago? I mean, which I know happened during the Yanukovych era too. But didn't a bunch of parliamentarians just start fighting each other?
Yes, they had a fight. It's like a normal thing for Ukrainian parliament, because in Ukrainian parliament, there are still communists.
Right.
And in office of Communist Party, there was a fax found with a document map of Ukraine divided like in three pieces, I think, because communists essentially It doesn't make sense that they are a party of Ukraine if they work towards like disintegration of Ukraine as a state.
Yeah,
they basically want USSR. So no, all normal countries, they banned communist parties like Poland, Baltic states.
Right. I always, whenever I see this sort of parliamentary chaos, multi-party chaos in Ukraine, I always feel really bad. I shake my head because I know that, you know, it's being shown on TV in Russia, and that Putin, who is openly skeptical of democracy, you know, will sort of point to it and be like, see, this is what happens when, you know, you have too many political parties. This is why you need a strong leader. And I know that there are Russians who completely buy into that logic. I mean, they look at Ukraine, they see a fractured country with a broken government, and Putin doesn't look so bad to them. But are you
absolutely
But are you optimistic anyway that Ukraine can get it together as a government and make democracy work in this part of the world?
Well, I'm optimistic about those new leaders that emerged, and they are all in their 30s, activists, a new political party, Democratic Alliance. They are all under 35 even, so they can't even run for president.
Right.
But they are absolutely new generation of new, like, European young people who do not have anything in common with former, like, corrupt communist past. And so there is hope that when this generation comes to power, Ukraine will be a completely different country. Right now, with the coming election, upcoming election in May, definitely there is no choice of a politician that would be represent some new kind of politics. Of course, those two candidates, Tymoshenko and Poroshenko, who lead in the polls, they are representatives of the former,
right,
like post-communist elite, and they are both believed to be corrupt.
Right. Tymoshenko is a former prime minister who was a political opponent of the deposed president Yanukovych and was actually jailed by him for a while. She has made energy deals with Putin and is widely perceived as corrupt. And then Poroshenko is like a chocolate producer, right? He has like a chocolate factory,
yeah,
is that
a
right?
Chocolate king, and she's a gas princess,
right?
Nicknames. So they are essentially both oligarchs, and a lot of people are, of course, disappointed because they say Euromaidan revolution was against this corruption, oligarchs, and see, we have two candidates for presidency who are basically both oligarchs. Doesn't
right.
make sense. But I think what makes sense is that even when any of them, you know, becomes the Ukrainian president, he or she will have to listen more to what society demands, because this is the major shift, the major change, that society now gained more power comparatively to what it used to have.
Right. Okay. So I guess the last thing we should discuss is the U.S. and to a lesser extent European role in all this. I get the sense from, you know, following you on social media, that you are not thrilled with how the U.S. has handled this situation so far, and from our previous conversations. Do you want to elaborate just on sort of recent action or lack thereof by the Obama administration and maybe reasons why you're skeptical?
Well, no, judging by agreements today in Switzerland, I think there is some successful development right now, but generally both the EU and the US, they were not very effective in countering Putin, because he was always ahead of them, he was making his moves, and they are responding to his calls immediately when he wants to see them. So he was like seen as a strong leader in this whole situation, and they are like seen as passive. He definitely senses Putin. He senses lack of leadership in the West. He thinks that they are weak. He thinks that they are corrupt, and that they will not stand up to him. That's why, of course, Ukrainian analysts who are watching this whole situation, they were disappointed because Russian side appeared stronger. Mm-hmm. And those sanctions that the U.S. introduced, they are not yet third level economic sanctions. So they did not really damage Russia.
No, although it looks like they were just a warning shot, like there's actually a new set of sanctions that Russia would face if they do press forward into eastern Ukraine now, and that may be what's bringing them to the table.
That's the point. Yeah. So we need to see now whether this agreement that was made in Geneva, whether it will be actually realized in practice in Ukraine. And then we can say whether Obama's soft approach was successful or not. But knowing those goals of Vladimir Putin, it's for me, it's hard to believe that he will just pull off his special forces from eastern Ukraine, who are right now deployed in those cities. They are basically coordinated by Russian GRU. External military intelligence unit inside the Russian Ministry of Defense. And there are a lot of Ukrainian SBU, Ukrainian Security Service, is releasing a lot of talks right now, a lot of papers confirming that. So essentially, even when Lavrov
is the Russian foreign minister.
Yes. Russian foreign minister signed this deal in Geneva saying that they will pull out those militants. They acknowledge that those militants belong to them, that they have control over them.
Right.
So I'm surprised that he signed.
Which they've been kind of going back and forth actually about whether or not the militants are Russians or not. They will say that they are and that they're not on the same day. I mean,
To be clear about who are the people, there are three groups. There are Russian professionals who are sent by GRU, by Russian military. They are the core group who coordinate things, who organize these things. Then there are so-called political tourists, like young guys who may be pro-Russian, pro-Putin, pro-Kremlin, and they would dream to have Ukraine as part of Russia. So they are being recruited even on social media websites, and there are announcements like, if you'd like to help us take over Ukraine, we pay $500, please come, we'll give you weapons. There are, finds like that on the internet. And then there is a third group, local residents, who are either pro-Russian genuinely, and they do want Putin to take over their territory, or they just want to protest against Ukrainian government and generally against Ukrainian corruption. Those people, locals, sometimes they do not clearly understand what they are standing for. They didn't have Maidan during Yanukovych time, and right now it's like their time to have Maidan. So they say, we are not pro-Russian, but we don't like government in Kiev. We think right. They are corrupt. Okay, but people in Kiev themselves are protesting against government in Kiev. So you can join them, but you don't do that under the flag of the Russian Federation, because basically you now protest not against government in Kiev, but you protest against your state, against your country. So there is this mix of people. And that's why when Putin, for example, says those coordinators to leave Ukraine, what happens to those who are just some, ideological participants of this whole action, whether they will listen, and whether then Putin will say, look, I pulled out some people, but those other guys did not listen, so I don't have control over them. This is what may happen, I assume.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Actually, one quick last thing, sort of a follow-up to how you feel about the administration, but a little more personal. So you told me earlier that you're about to go to Ukraine, but so far you've been and are currently in Washington, D.C., and that means you're surrounded by Americans, but albeit a subsection of Americans who pay much more attention than most Americans do to foreign policy. What has been your impression of the conversation in Washington, not at the highest levels of power, not Obama and Biden and John McCain, but just sort of, you know, in the kind of professional news watching world in DC, just or just even like your neighbors or friends or whoever, you know, what are people saying to you about Ukraine? Do you think that, I guess, the sort of well-informed subset of Americans have the right idea about what's going on? Relatively well informed.
Definitely, they are much more informed now than they used to be, because Ukraine is like a black spot on the map for most of people, even in Washington, D.C. I would say here, definitely, like most people, they support Ukraine because they see Ukraine as a victim, and it's really, really sad and unfair that after people took down this corrupt government, sacrificed up to 200 lives, then they are being attacked by a foreign power who doesn't like what they did and tries to prevent them from achieving their goals, fulfilling their dreams. So it's really, there is some feeling of, you know, like, feeling of sympathy to Ukrainians, I would say so. On the other hand, as you know, there is a left-wing segment of American society, and
I know them.
You know them, yes. And for example, I used to support them on some issues about freedom of speech, freedom of information, even on Snowden. But
we should talk about Edward Snowden.
Yeah, right now these same people are speaking some outrageous things, like Putin has his legitimate interest. All this is staged. This whole Maidan, it was staged by Western powers, and they basically are following the lines of Russian propaganda, because they think if their own government is against this, it means it's true.
I'm
surprised that they are. I gotta
say about Edward Snowden, you know, I would say most people I know are sympathetic to what Edward Snowden did as far as leaking that information. I've always been a little more skeptical, but I don't know. I go back and forth on it. I have to say, whatever anyone's feelings about the Snowden documents, about the NSA, there was this thing that happened just in the last 24 hours where Edward Snowden went on Russian TV to earnestly ask Vladimir Putin a question about, you know, so does Russia do mass surveillance like the NSA? To which, you know, the ultimate softball question, to which Putin answers, no, of course not. In Russia, we have the rule of law, and we never spy on our citizens, unlike in America. I mean, I don't, you know, say what you will about the NSA thing. Edward Snowden, and maybe he should seek refuge in Russia because that's the only place that he can find refuge and he doesn't want to go to jail. Fine. The fact that Edward Snowden is directly facilitating and working with Vladimir Putin's propaganda and trying, and I mean, look, the U.S. does spy on the internet, we know, and it seems like a pretty troubling thing. But rest assured, anyone watching this, Russia spies on the internet a lot, an awful lot. I mean, Russia is kind of a worst case scenario for what the NSA might be doing, and it is just kind of baffling to me that Edward Snowden wants to be a part of that. But sorry, and my editorial.
Absolutely, but yeah. Dave, you take into consideration, he's like a hostage. I mean, right now he's in Russia and they are using him. Okay, they helped him and now he needs to pay off. So basically, that's the deal. Unfortunately, I think he understands himself very well what Russia is. It's really sad how he kind of gave this great idea about freedom of information, of communication, and now it's all being shattered by where he is right now, whom he's facilitating right now. It would make much more sense if he fled, for example, to Iceland, which is, you know, the most liberal country in terms of freedom of information.
Right.
And instead, he fled to a terrible, like, dictatorship, which is now being compared to, like, Nazi Germany.
Well, and I mean, it was pretty bad when he fled there, and then this was before, you know, everything went down in Ukraine. And I guess my charitable reading of Snowden has always been that he's just a very naive person who didn't fully realize what he was getting into, but who is going to have a very interesting rest of his life now, whether it's in Russia or somewhere else. But
yeah, definitely. Well, now he needs to do some revelations on Russian surveillance and then flee to another country. That's the way he can.
I don't think that's going to go so well for him if he takes that option, which I doubt he will. But best of luck to Edward Snowden if you're out there watching this. So Alena, thanks so much again. It's always great to talk to you. Do you have any last things you want to say? Or
no, that's it. I can say that all Ukrainians, of course, they follow the news, not the way all the rest people are following, because they have they are very worried, much more worried than anyone else, because this is your life, your family, your country. And it's been like a psychological terror, like for months right now.
Yeah.
So many Ukrainians are just losing it because it's really very hard to watch. And we wish that Ukraine goes off the news and things come down in Ukraine and it moves towards where it is supposed to move, towards democracy. But for now, it's been very terrifying what's happening.
Yeah, well, here's hoping that when this video posts in the next 2 hours, that this latest peace agreement holds. So anyway, it's great to talk to you. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Dave. Bye.
Bye-bye.